How did Hitler consolidate or gain more power 1933 to 1934? First thing you need to remember is that when Hitler came to power as Chancellor, there were only three Nazis in the entire cabinet. This wasn't a Nazi takeover. This was Hitler being used by other parties, or so they thought, to control Germany. So Hitler has to come in and gain more power for the Nazi party before he can take over the country and run it the way that he wants. So he has a plan. Thing to keep in mind with the rise of the Nazi party, once Hitler is Chancellor, is to think of it as a revolution. He's got to get people out on the streets, he's got to get people mobilised, and he's got to try and shake the whole country up so that he can get as many Nazis and as many Nazi allies into government as possible. There was a lot of violence used during this time. The first thing that Hitler does is he goes to Hindenburg, who's still the president, and says, "I want another election." Hindenburg agrees, and Hitler immediately lets the SA loose throughout Germany to use violence against political opponents, and he particularly uses this against communists and social democrats, who are likely to be his strongest opponents. What's different this time? Hitler had done this many times before, sometimes opposed by the police, other times not. What's different this time is that the Nazis have control over many policemen in Germany, particularly the part of Germany called Prussia. Hitler's made sure of this. He's got one of his guys called Frick, F-R-I-C-K, in charge of the police. He's in charge of the Ministry for the Interior. That controlled the police force. So the SA actually came to help the police control the communists. And what that really meant was that the communists, not only would policemen not help communists, not only would policemen not arrest members of the SA, the police would actually join in and help. So this is one of the first things that Hitler does when he calls the new election, unleashes the SA. And then the 27th of February 1933, there's an absolute godsend for Hitler, and that's the Reichstag fire. A Dutch communist called van der Lubbe, he was caught setting fire to the building. Now, the Nazis immediately thought this was a communist takeover, and the evidence is that the Nazis really did genuinely believe that night that the communists were trying to take over the state. There's no evidence at all. We now know that van der Lubbe was acting on his own, and there was no evidence at all of a communist plot. The police at the time said, "Look, this isn't a communist plot, this is a lone nutcase." It was actually a disaster for the communists because it was predictable what would happen next. The courts found van der Lubbe on his own guilty. All the other communists who were put on trial were found not guilty. Hitler was furious with this, and this is when Hitler began to say we need people's courts who would swear an oath of loyalty to him. And basically, the people's courts are the beginning of the end of law and order, because what that means is you don't get a fair trial. What it means is whenever you go to trial, the conviction is you're going to be convicted, and the result of the trial is going to be whatever the Nazi party wants it to be. But after van der Lubbe burned down the Reichstag fire decree was passed, and what that said was, listen, we're in a state of war, we're in a state of emergency, the communists are trying to take over, we've got to protect the state. And so it was almost as if terrorists were attacking Germany. That's the way the German people responded. The Communist Party was banned. Even the Social Democrats came under a lot of attack. Their newspapers weren't allowed to publish. They weren't allowed to campaign during the last week. When it comes to the 5th of March 1933, there's the general election, and this is important. Only 44% of the population voted for the Nazis. Now, they won 288 seats in the Reichstag. Even with all the violence, even with the police helping the SA persecute members of the Social Democrats, even with the SA beating up, murdering communists, communists and Social Democrats between them still managed 30% of the vote. So it isn't a case, even in 5th of March 1933, it isn't the case that Hitler's able to win over the majority of the German people to vote for his party. The Germans tended to like Hitler, but they didn't like the Nazis. They associated the Nazis with the SA, with violence on the street. They looked at characters like Hermann Göring, who was the head of the, who became head of the Luftwaffe, and he was seen as a bit of a comical character beside Hitler. This guy was always having affairs, spending huge amounts of money. You know, Robert Ley, who had become the head of the German Labour Front, was a notorious womanizer and a drunk. Germans tended not to like the Nazis, but they did like Hitler. They did like what Hitler stood for, a strong Germany. And so this is one of Hitler's problems. How can he bring the majority of the German people onto his side if he can't bring the majority of the German people to like his party? 23rd of March 1933, Hitler brings in something called the Enabling Act. You needed two-thirds of the Reichstag to change the German constitution. Now, the constitution was a set of rules that was set down when the new German state was created after World War II. And the idea was that everybody had to follow these rules. If a government passed a law and the constitution said the law is wrong, that law could be struck off. So to change the constitution, you need a two-thirds majority. This is a problem to Hitler. Hitler can be in could have 60% of the Reichstag and still not be able to change the constitution. He could have 70 or 80% of the Reichstag behind him. But every time he went against the German constitution, every time he went against those big rules, those rules that were set down in stone, those rules that you were not allowed to touch, well, even if he had 70% of the Reichstag, he would have to convince the Reichstag every time he went against the constitution. And that's not the sort of power Hitler was after. Hitler wanted to do what he wanted, when he wanted. Now, one of the things the Reichstag or the constitution said was there had to be regular elections. Hitler didn't want that. The constitution said there had to be different political parties. There had to be freedom of speech. You had a right to a fair trial. All these things were in the constitution. Hitler didn't want to be bothered with any of those things. He wanted absolute power. So he wanted something called the Enabling Law or an Enabling Act, which would basically say, if Hitler wants to change the law, Hitler can change the law. To get that, he needed two-thirds of the Reichstag to vote to bring in this Enabling Act. He didn't have two-thirds majority. Remember, the Nazi Party only won 44%, but another 10% was made up of his allies. He was never going to get that vote on his own. So what he did was quite simple. Ban the communists. Communists aren't allowed to turn up to the Reichstag. Göring was in charge, Hermann Göring was in charge of the Reichstag. He shouted down anybody who tried to disagree with him during debate. And when they voted for this Enabling Act, they made sure that there were lots of SA stormtroopers standing around in brown shirts, looking very angry, looking very hard, and looking at anybody who would even think about disagreeing with Hitler. And funnily enough, given the choice between voting and agreeing with Hitler and giving him this new Enabling Act, or having your head smashed in by a group of SA stormtroopers, most people went along with, let's give Hitler his Enabling Act. The only party that stood against him were the 90 members of the Social Democrats. They voted against the Enabling Act. Of course, those 90 votes couldn't stop Hitler. Hitler was now able to create whatever laws he wanted. And the Social Democrats knew they were doomed anyway. I mean, so they might as well go down with a blaze of glory. Local government was completely reorganized, and this is important because every little area like Prussia or Bavaria, like little local counties within Germany, these were the size of other countries, and they could really create their own little laws within Germany that had a certain amount of freedom. For example, they had control over their own police forces. Well, by April 1933, that had all gone. It was all under control of the Nazi Party. So by this stage, Hitler can make his own laws. He's got the police under his control. Local governments have been shut down. There's really nobody left within Germany who can really mount any serious opposition to Hitler. He's well on his way to having power. He begins to get rid of the trade unions in May, and that's very important. He begins to bring in his own labour movement. And that what that does is, well, there were a lot of people who would have voted Social Democrat because they wanted a good deal for workers. They didn't want workers treated harshly. Now, Social Democrats have a bit of a problem in that there's high unemployment. Well, you know, workers want work. They want factories open. If Hitler can get the factories open, you might be inclined to vote Hitler more than Social Democrat. But when these factories get open, people want a trade union. They want to belong to an organisation that makes sure you've got a fair wage and you won't be sacked, you know, by an unfair boss. And people like the trade unions. So Hitler doesn't just get rid of the trade unions. He brings in his own labour movement. And what that does is that begins to win the workers over to Hitler. They become not his greatest fan, but they're all right with him to begin with. And some of them go over to his side. But it means there's going to be no strikes. There's going to be, people aren't going to come into the street to oppose Hitler. He's got the factories open again. And then he's making efforts to take care of workers. So they tend to think, well, this guy's all right. June 1933, Hitler strikes a deal with the Pope. It's called the Concordat. And that's very important because one of the few remaining large parties in Germany was the Catholic Centre Party. And that was a party that was set up to protect Catholics within Germany. Catholics within Germany had been given a very hard time for a very long time. But they had their own political party, the Centre Party. And that party looked after Catholic rights. Now, the Catholic Party wasn't too fond of Hitler. They viewed Hitler as a bit of a thug. They viewed him as lawless. Catholics didn't like the way that he tended to like people worshipping him. Generally, Catholics like the idea that people should worship God, not Hitler. So the Centre Party is a problem. It might not do as it's told. Hitler wants rid of all political parties. So what he does is he strikes a deal with the Pope, the Concordat. And basically the deal was this. Shut the Centre Party down. Get rid of the Centre Party. And I'll make sure Roman Catholics aren't persecuted in Germany. That was the deal that the Pope went along with. And so the Catholic Centre Party is shut down. So by July 1933, all political parties are banned. The Centre Party shut itself down. The Social Democratic Party, the Socialists, outlawed. And then there's a law passed for the formation of new parties. There were some parties like the Nationalist Party, which were Nazi allies. They were friendly with the Nazis. They got on quite well with them. They voted with them in the Reichstag. Hitler won't even tolerate those guys. They're not allowed to exist either. You have to shut your party down and become Nazis. And given that they were heavily outnumbered, they decided to go along with that. People's courts are finally set up and are running within Germany. We come down to the 30th of June 1934, which is called the Night of the Long Knives. Now, that's actually very important to understand. Hitler, remember, up until this stage, has been running a revolution. There's violence in the streets. To get the results that he wants during election time, it's the SA who are going out, who are attacking communists, who are attacking socialists. To get the Reichstag to vote in his enabling act, it's the SA who are standing at the side of the Reichstag looking ready to beat the tar out of anybody who would dare disagree with the Nazi party. Ernst Röhm, who's the head of the SA, is one of the few guys in the Nazi party who is not afraid of Hitler. Not only is he not afraid of him, he almost sees himself as Hitler's equal. He didn't ask Hitler's permission to do things. And Ernst Röhm, he wants a number of things that Hitler doesn't want. Ernst Röhm wants this revolution to keep on going. He wants more and more violence on the street. His SA, who had fought for Hitler during the 1920s and the early 30s, he expects them to get rewards. He expects those people to be rewarded. He wants a radical, violent revolution. He wants something that Hitler isn't prepared to give him because Hitler's got a different goal. Hitler wants to get the army built up so he can make a great Germany. And he knows that Ernst Röhm's SA are basically hooligans. These men are not fit to fight a war. There are 500,000 of them, 500,000 men. That makes Ernst Röhm very, very powerful. The German army, remember, at this stage has only got 100,000 men. Ernst Röhm basically comes to the army and says, listen, I want my guys to become a sort of a military force to help you guys out. And the army are horrified. I mean, these guys with beer bellies who don't have any military training, don't have any military discipline, who get into barroom brawls, who are into murders. Most of the guys in charge of the German army are what they called Prussian aristocrats. They came from Prussia in Germany. They were aristocrats, i.e. they're born to very wealthy, very snobby families, and they detest the SA. And they also realise that the SA can't create a modern fighting force. The men in the German army wanted a modern force with radios, tanks, aircraft, all working in coordination. They didn't want 500,000 Lagerleuts charging into France. And so the guys in charge of the army begin to panic and think Ernst Röhm's got too much power. The other huge problem that Hitler has is that the people see if Hitler's in power, and they believe that Hitler is a man who wants law and order. They don't want fighting in the street anymore. They don't want to see political rallies where people shoot at each other. They want peace on the streets, and Ernst Röhm is not delivering this. Hitler said he could deliver it. The SA just aren't willing to play ball. The SA want more revolution. They want more violent action. They want to really persecute the enemies of the state until they're all gone, until they're all wiped out. And the ordinary German voter doesn't want that. They want peace and quiet again. They want an end to all these troubles. There are guys within the Nazi Party who look at Ernst Röhm and think, here's an opportunity. Guys like Heinrich Himmler, who was in charge of the SS, Hitler's bodyguard, looks at Ernst Röhm and thinks, here's an opportunity. Hermann Göring looks at Ernst Röhm and thinks, here's an opportunity. Here's an opportunity for more power. If we can persuade Hitler to get rid of Röhm, that will give us more power and influence in the Nazi state. The German army looks at Ernst Röhm and said, we need rid of this guy. He's a problem. We can't deal with him. We can't work with him. His demands are too extreme. We want rid of him. And so Göring and Himmler and members of the army persuade Hitler that Röhm is getting ready to take over the state, that he's going to attack the German army, that he's going to try a revolution. And Hitler effectively panics. The 3rd of June 1934, Hitler, with a very cunning plan, phones up Ernst Röhm and says, I'd like you to get all the leaders of the SA together. And Ernst Röhm, like an idiot, gets them all together. Hitler arrives in the early hours of the morning in a car with a pistol in his hand and knocks on Röhm's bedroom door. Röhm arrives. Hitler calls him a pig and has him arrested. At this stage, a lot of the leaders of the SA are arrested, and over the next few days, they're executed. The SS also used the opportunity to murder anybody who they basically didn't like. And a lot of Hitler's political opponents within Germany are murdered. A former chancellor called Chancellor Schleicher was shot to death. A former Nazi leader, Gregor Strasser, who had opposed Hitler, was murdered by the SS. These are guys who are not part of the SA. These are guys who are not connected to Ernst Röhm in any way whatsoever. But the Nazis had them murdered because it was just a good opportunity. And then afterwards, the Reichstag passed a law called the Retrospective Law for the Measures of Defence of the State. They passed a law for the Measures of the Defence of the State saying, we should have passed a law earlier saying Hitler had the right to murder whoever he wanted if they became troublesome. But now that he's gone and done it, we're passing a law to say what he did several days ago was okay and was perfectly legal. That's not how laws work, but that's what the Reichstag did. And at this stage, the night of the long knives, Hitler has really got rid of anybody who can effectively oppose him. The SA were disbanded afterwards. The SS take charge, and they're a much more professional, smaller, leaner, more elite organization, something that Hitler can control, something that he doesn't need to fear. The army think Hitler is wonderful because Hitler's got rid of this problem for him. They came to Hitler and said, Ernst Röhm, we don't like him. Hitler says, there you are, guys. Ernst Röhm's dead. So the army is very happy with Hitler, and this is a man who is trying to give them more tanks, more bombers, give them the soldiers that they want. He's listening to them. He's not opposed to them. So the army is generally happy with Hitler. They look down on him. He wasn't one of them. He wasn't wealthy. He wasn't born to money. But the army liked him. But the ordinary people begin to see Hitler as a man of law and order. Hitler's a man who got rid of the thuggery on the streets. Hitler's a man who will stand up to the likes of Ernst Röhm. And that's incredible. Hitler came to power because the SA persecuted his enemies. Hitler illegally has these men murdered and then has the brass neck to go to the Reichstag to say, pass a law saying that those murders were all right. And the Reichstag votes and says, yep, whenever you murder somebody, Hitler, it's A-okay. Ordinary people can't murder people, but you, Hitler, you're all right, you can do that. Yet ordinary people think here's a man who's for law and order. And at that state, Hitler really has complete control over the German nation. It finally becomes official, August 1934. The president, Hindenburg, died. Hitler knew this was coming. Hindenburg was getting older and older and was beginning to lose his mind. Hitler visited him the 31st of July, 1934. And Hindenburg said, oh, I'm pleased to see you, Your Majesty. Hindenburg's mind was so confused that he believed that Hitler was the Kaiser who'd been alive during World War One. Hitler at this stage thinks this guy's on his last legs, he's going to die soon. Instead of electing a new president, or instead of saying, I want to be president myself, Hitler says, no, what we're going to do is we're going to create this new role, the Führer, where the Chancellor and the President and the head of the army are all the one person. And that means there's nobody who can challenge Hitler. Hitler's in charge of the army, and he makes sure that all the heads of the army and then all the soldiers swear an oath of loyalty to him personally. That would be very, very important. Later in the war, 1944, the Russians are coming in from the east and are slaughtering the German army. The Americans and the British are coming in from the west. The D-Day landings have been successful. Hitler is guaranteed that he will lose the war. And at that stage, there were a number of German generals who said, listen, we need to get rid of Hitler. We need to get rid of Hitler so that we can strike some sort of a deal with America and Britain so that we don't get taken over by the Russians. And yet, even at that time, there were German generals who said, yes, this man is destroying Germany. This man is guaranteed that we will lose the war by having the brainwave of fighting America and Russia at the same time. This man is making disastrous decisions with the German army, which are costing literally hundreds of thousands of lives. But we will not attack him because we swore an oath saying we would defend him. These oaths are very, very, very important. And they're sworn to Hitler. It starts 1934, and Hitler makes sure that the heads of the army swear an oath of loyalty to him, that ordinary German soldiers swear an oath of loyalty to him, that every German minister in the cabinet will swear an oath of loyalty to him, not to the German people, not to the German nation, not to the laws of Germany, not to God, to him. And at that stage, Hitler can basically make whichever law he wants. The odd thing about it is Hitler actually, and to some extent, loses a degree of control here, because there's no way that any one man can know everything you need to know to run a nation. Yet, at the end of the day, one man, Hitler, is being left to make every single key decision. And because of that, eventually there would be many mistakes, and it would eventually end up with Germany losing the war. But 1934 is the time when Hitler gains control of Germany, first by putting his foot in the accelerator, letting the SA go and persecuting his enemies, and then he hits the brake, destroys the SA, puts the SS in charge, and convinces the German people that he's a man of law and order.